1 o'clock hour, Chase William, D. Mace here on a Friday. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and we say hello to Mitch Light from The Athletic. Mitch, how you doing?
Chase, I'm doing well. Hope you're doing well today.
Doing fantastic, and it's good to have you with us as we talk a little college football as camps are starting to open. And, you know, we've spent so much time in the offseason talking NIL and conference realignment. How about I just start with a simple question? What team intrigues you the most? Doesn't have to be in the SEC, can be all over college football, but intrigues you the most of potentially doing some things this year in college football?
That's a good and difficult question because it's, you know, you brought up the NIL stuff. Usually at this point we're so sick of talking about teams and strengths and weaknesses and schedule that we're ready for football. And we're ready for football anyway. But like, I don't feel like this offseason we've done enough talking about teams because there's been so much other stuff to talk about. So, you know, I'll start in the SEC. I mean, I don't know if this is a team that I expect to be great or anything, but I'm intrigued by Florida. You know, I was just reading up on them a little bit more, and you know, Anthony Richardson's a guy that Florida fans kind of fell in love with last year when he was the backup quarterback, and he has all the measurables, and I know NFL scouts like him, but they're not great at the skill positions, and the secondary, which you used to always see at least one or maybe two future NFL cornerbacks back there, that they don't have as much depth in the secondary. Then you get Billy Napier coming in, and his job is to win games, obviously, but it's also to recruit better than his predecessor, and that things aren't going well for the Gators on the recruiting front. Miami is doing very well, and so I just think that's an intriguing program that, you know, we used to just chalk up as a top 10 program, and it hasn't been the case recently. So, and then, I mean, I think the entire, we say this every year, but the entire SEC West is fascinating. Like Ole Miss, you know, Jackson Dart's a really good quarterback, but they lost a ton, bring a lot in the portal. And I think that's another thing. Like, how are these teams that relied on the portal a lot in the last couple of years, like Michigan State? You know, they struck gold last year with Kenneth Walker. And, you know, some coaches will tell you it's not a sustainable model. You don't want to rely on transfers every year. But, hey, if Mel Tucker does begin this year and they're recruiting a little better, maybe it is sustainable for them. So I think there's so many storylines all over the place. But I think if I had to pick one thing, it would be almost like, how are these teams that rely on transfers going to fare this year?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I did read the story on The Athletic about the sibling rivalry between Trevor Etienne, who's going to be a freshman at Florida, the team you just brought up, and then Travis Etienne, who, of course, is with the Jacksonville Jaguars. I you know, we'll see how Trevor's college career fares. His brother's was obviously pretty good, and it worked out for him. But this is kind of a cool read about the rivalries that these two have.
Yeah, and I believe both from Alabama, maybe Louisiana, I forgot. But you bring up a good, because that's like a position. They have two, well, DeMarcus Bowman already transferred. I think he transferred to UCF. But Florida had two five-star transfers on their roster last year. DeMarcus Bowman, I think it was, who transferred from Clemson after one semester, and then Lorenzo Lingard, who transferred from Miami. So, you know, you think you're bringing in two five-star running backs, one of them is going to pan out. Neither of them have so far. So there's an opportunity for Etienne to come in and do some things. Now they have other guys there, but that's just an interesting storyline for Florida.
We'll talk with Mitch Light of The Athletic. Now, Mitch, it's still the consensus still in the SEC after SEC media days is that Alabama is the favorite to win the SEC championship game. Why is that seeming that Georgia beat them in the national championship? Is it because people are not quite sold on Stetson Bennett, and they are with Alabama's quarterback?
I think that's a huge part of it. And, you know, Stetson Bennett could win the national championship this year and then figure out a way to get a seventh year of eligibility or eighth, whatever it is. And I think we'd be having the same discussion next year. Now, you know, saying he's not as good as Bryce Young is not a knock on Stetson Bennett. But they lost a lot. You know, they lost a bunch on the offensive line. Their defense, I think three or four returning starters. So I think it's, you know, it's just the fact that Alabama has been the team that we can pencil in every year. But, you know, I think it's just a combination of not being in love with the quarterback position at Georgia, even though they've got, you know, they've got a talented quarterback room behind Stetson Bennett, where in the past couple of years, they didn't really have much depth. I mean, was JT Daniels hurt last year or not? We never really knew, but this year they've got some 2 5-star quarterbacks who haven't played yet that if something happens to Bennett. But I think it boils down to just the quarterback position and just overall program depth right now.
Now, also in the SEC, UT, how do you think they fare? Obviously, people are looking at Alabama 1, Georgia 2, Georgia to win their side of the SEC, but many people are not quite decided on who will follow up Georgia, whether it's going to be Kentucky or possibly Florida, who you're intrigued by, or will it be Tennessee? What are some of the pros for Tennessee in regards to coming second or even really truly challenging Georgia to win that conference?
Yeah, I'll start with one of the cons there, the schedule. You know, when you play Alabama every year out of the East, and the way the current schedule is, that's not sure. It's not a sure loss, but it's been for most teams in the SEC, and they go to LSU now. Usually you chalk up LSU as a really difficult game, but LSU is a team in the West that could finish second or they could finish fifth. We don't really know. I think the positives for Tennessee are, you know, the offense, the quarterback position. Hendon Hooker was very good last year. It's, you know, some guys transfer out, skill position, but they're still very good there. Cedric Tillman kind of came out of nowhere, had a huge year last year. A lot of experience on the offensive line. And I just think there's a lot of program belief right now. You know, it's just we study, and you guys know this, we study these coaching hires. And those of us that think we know what we're doing, you know, you love this coach, he doesn't pan out. You know, Josh Heupel, you had to be a true believer to really think that Josh Heupel was a great hire for Tennessee. And, you know, we don't know what's going to happen down the road, but of all the first-year coaches nationally, I mean, he's right at the top of the list. That offense was very good. And so I'm a Josh Heupel believer right now. So I you know, flip a coin, a three-sided coin for second in the East, but, I, you know, right now I'd probably go Tennessee or Florida.
Believing the Heupel or something. There's a T-shirt there somewhere.
Oh,
see, it's probably already being printed up.
He needs NIL money. Actually, I saw a quote from him. He's like, I would have loved to have NIL money back when he was starting quarterback at Oklahoma. You know, winning a national championship there, he would have earned some money.
Man, you could go back. College quarterbacks who were high profile that never turned into NFL quarterbacks who could have cleaned up at NIL and then had, you know, a lot of savings going into a professional career that did not include football. Right.
Well, that's kind of the theme of the NIL. You know, everyone's for these guys getting money, but it's the kids who aren't going to be, you know, they don't know at this point, but the ones who aren't going to sign those big NFL contracts that, you know, you'd like to see profit off of that, and who become like, kind of like cult figures in their respective communities. And hey, maybe he's not going to be a top 2 or 3 round draft pick, but there's no reason why he can't profit off that. So the easy answer, Willie, say someone like Tim Tebow and all that, but Tim Tebow didn't need the NIL money. You knew whatever he was going to do, he was going to be successful.
Mitch, speaking of quarterbacks, Will Levis, good personality, playing for a program that is not known for a long line of great college quarterbacks, right? They've had some lean years there. He's pretty good. What is your scouting report on him? I mean, because Kentucky's one of those teams that, you know, the expectations are going up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he passes the look test. You know, I mentioned Anthony Richardson before. You know, I don't have Levis's, you know, measurables in front of me, but I think he's 6'5". You know, he's called big arm. It's funny, you know, he transfers from Penn State, and I know a lot of Penn State fans wish they had him over Sean Clifford, who's back. I mean, they both had their moments in college. But I saw someone, I don't know if it was a story or basically compare, I think it was an Andy Staples mailbag on our site, like, what's with the Will Levis hype? You compare him to Emory Jones's numbers at Florida last year, and they were very similar, and Jones got, you know, I wouldn't say ran out of town, but he transferred to Arizona State, and Levis is considered this top prospect. It's just basically the measurables, and the fact that Kentucky is running a pro-style offense that the Rams, you know, run. So I think scouts can get a good look at what he looks like in that type of offense there. So, yeah, I mean, they should be really good. I think Chris Rodriguez is back, outstanding running back. They have churned out really good running backs in recent years, and we know under Mark Stoops they're going to have good offensive linemen. So, again, we've talked Florida, we've talked Tennessee, we've talked Kentucky. I think it's going to be a fascinating race.
Here's one, again, stealing out of the Athletics mailbag you just referenced to Andy Staples, your colleague. But one question I thought was a good one. Remember last year Wake Forest was kind of the fun, out-of-nowhere team that had a really good year. You always like to see that at some programs that, you know, don't have that year-in, year-out success. Do you have your eye on any team or two that could be that kind of team this year? Not necessarily to be in the playoffs or anything like that, but just to to have a really good year?
I give you my answer. Back in my years at Athlon Willie, I do all these interviews around the country. People would ask me that. My answer would be, if I knew, they'd be ranked in the top 10. They wouldn't be ranked 37. So that's my answer. I don't, UCLA is an interesting team to me. Talk about a guy whose star has fallen, Chip Kelly, as a head coach, but they've got some experience. Dorian Thompson Robinson, I believe, is in his fifth year there, but fourth year as a starter. Zach Charbonnet, the running back. Charbonneau, I guess it is, the running back from Duke, was really good. So they're kind of the Utah's the favorite there. USC's lacking. Their defense was terrible last year. Wouldn't be surprised if UCLA, did some things. And I know we probably need to go, but Wake Forest, you brought up. Ari Wasserman in our podcast talked about this, and we've talked about how there's no trades in the NFL. But what if a team like Wake Forest, who should be good again this year, had Sam Hartman, who's one of the best quarterbacks in the country, but they're like, you know what, it's time for us to rebuild. Let's trade Sam Hartman to Texas A&M, who's got everything except a proven quarterback, and maybe we can get three or four of their five-star recruits from last year on the defensive line. And so that helps Wake Forest build for the future there. So we had some fun with that on the podcast, and I just thought of that when you brought up Wake Forest.
Now, LSU is not too far removed from a national championship. Can Brian Kelly get them back to a position where they're competing, truly competing in the SEC?
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason. LSU is one of those programs that has all the built-in advantages. They've got a very intriguing quarterback race too. Their recruiting is very interesting because, as we know, the state of Louisiana is a great state for talent, and they own that state. Now, Alabama's gone in and plucked some guys away in recent years, but LSU has a solid recruiting class for 23, but they're doing it going national. They're not doing it locally. In fact, the top three or four guys, I think they only have one of the top 10 guys in state right now committed. And some theories are that, hey, they went out and hired Brian Kelly, who was at Notre Dame, had a national staff, so they're recruiting nationally because that's what Notre Dame did. So once this staff has a time to, make some relationships in the state of Louisiana, they'll start recruiting better. But, Derek, I think that's one thing you have to look for LSU going forward, because I don't think LSU can win national championships unless they're dominating in the state in recruiting, because, no team can win a title by just recruiting its own state, but you got to do well, especially if you're LSU. So that's what I'm looking for from Brian Kelly and that staff.
He is Mitch Light of The Athletic joining us here on Chase, Willie, and D-Mace. Mitch, appreciate the time as always. We'll do it again soon.
All right. Take care, guys.
Mitch Light of The Athletic. Coming up next, we'll get back into the Titans and some things that we talked about earlier, including the defensive back that they signed, where he came from. No, I don't mean Michigan State, but we will discuss that coming up next. We are your racing station, 102.5 and 106.3. The game is Nashville's home for NASCAR. Tune in this Sunday at 12:30 for the Verizon 200. You can also join me every Sunday morning at 8 for Chasing Checkers as I talk to all the drivers and I get you set for race weekend. Jeff Burton of NBC Sports will be my guest. NASCAR on 102.5 and 106.3. The game is presented by the Nashville Fairground Speedway.
How much do you feel you know what Ryan wants on a particular route these days? And do you kind of help translate to that to other guys too? Like, Ryan really likes this here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely just trust built over time. And, this off season, over the last couple of years, just knowing by Ryan communicating with us, like, hey, on this route, like, the most important thing is you're here, or, that you're in this landmark, whatever it is. And it's been awesome just to see that this spring. I feel like there's a lot of growth there.
There we go. Nick Westbrook Akina.
Did Nick start singing there at the end, or was that?
I don't know. Are you playing Nickelback? Is that what we're doing?
Can you imagine in the middle of answering a question at a press conference, like you stop your instrument to start singing a song, karaoke?
Yeah, that'd be good. Nick Westbrook Akina.
I think you got the gist of what he was saying there.
Talking about Ryan Tannehill. Interesting song selection for that. But talking about Ryan Tannehill and getting on the same page with him. We've talked a lot about NWI and what he could mean this year. And I think that he's saying all the right things. It seems like that Tannehill is on the same page with him, which I think is a very good thing. But we're going to see exactly how effective he can be.
Well, I think this will be because the one guy that Ryan feels comfortable with is him. He's the only returning guy, really, let's just say returning start. He's the only one on that offense, I mean, that has caught, you know, meaningful passes in games. He's the only guy. Not the tight end, not Robert Woods or Treylon Burks or the other. It's him. He's the long guy. So I think he's going to have a really good season for number three. I truly do. I think he's going to force the Titans to make a decision at the end of the season whether to keep him or allow him to move on. I know they probably got, you know, that fourth year they can tender him, I believe. But I think this is the season because you've seen a progression every year.
Yeah.
Like you've seen it. I know people got mad at him about the whole Pittsburgh thing. He didn't get depth. I get it happens sometimes. I get it. And Titans fans, you had a right to be upset. But I think this kid has made he's made that progression that you needed to see from a young guy each and every year. And the most important part is that Ryan Tannehill feels comfortable and trusts him. There's a reason why Ryan would go to him in certain particular times in a game, clutch times, because why? He trusted him. Many people in the stands probably were like, what are you doing? But Ryan trusted that he would catch the ball, be where he's supposed to be when he's supposed to be there. And that you can't take for granted.
He sounds to me like a veteran. That's what I like about how he carries himself. I think that's how you go from being undrafted to not playing a whole lot your first year to making the kind of jump that he made. My big question for him, the next level will be, can he get a little more separation when he's getting more attention? I think he slots really well as the number three.
Mm-hmm.
Last year he was forced into after being one of the more main targets because of the obvious when A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, Warner both were not in there. And I thought there were some games where Ryan Tannehill would go back there and I didn't feel like anybody could get open. Like there was a couple of games where it was him, Des Fitzpatrick was thrown in there. They brought Cody Hollister off of the street late in the season.
Yeah.
And so they had a mixture of guys and you're like, who's going to get open? Who's going to make a play? So can he get to a next level of, yeah, I'm getting some attention from the defense, but I can still find a way to get open.
Yeah.
That would be a next level for me.
Well, those moments I think will help him this season where you're talking about a second-year guy last year that was thrust into a position that he shouldn't have been in at all. And at times it didn't work out well for him. But I think sometimes you have to go through those phases. The Titans thought enough of him, even though it didn't at times work, they thought enough for him that he comes back and be the third receiver still, but they're still believing that he can get even better.
Yeah, no doubt. The move that they did make today, they signed a defensive back in John Robinson when he was on with us yesterday. If you missed that, you can go to thegamenashville.com and subscribe to the Chase Willie and D-Mace podcast. Said they'd probably make a move after Buster Skrien retired, but they signed Shakur Brown, a defensive back, played college ball at Michigan State, Derek's alma mater as well. But he spent last year playing 9 games for the Pittsburgh Maulers in the USFL, or I should say he did that this spring. Also spent some time on the practice squad with Kansas City and Detroit last season. So an interesting move by the Titans to bring this guy in, yet another USFL player that has been signed in the NFL.
Is anybody keeping track of how many guys who played in the USFL are in camps with players right now? I'd be interested in knowing that. I haven't looked to see, but I've always been curious, as we said earlier in the show, of what that league could do for players like him to give him a chance to showcase and earn a job in the best league in the world. You know those leagues are secondary. Mm-hmm. And next year, there's an interesting question with the XFL trying to make a comeback. You'll have another pool of players. You know, you feel like they should probably get together and merge or something like that. You're not going to have two minor leagues, right?
Well, that's what it seems.
But I think, you know, we'll see how the top players in the USFL, what that means, if a good number of them make a roster this year.
Well, the con is that you never get a break. It's like you go from the NFL season, have a couple weeks off, then you go to the USFL season or the XFL when it does get going, and then you get a couple weeks, then you're back on the NFL roster. That's the con. The pro is these teams feel, well, he's in football shape. He should be ready to go. You know, I'm pretty sure John Robinson and Vrabel thought about that. This guy is ready to go. He's in shape. He's still in football rhythm. Let's bring him out here. We worked him out. So now we're going to add him to our roster.
So John Robinson was telling us he had worked out a group of guys, and this guy has won the job. We also are wondering, you know, can he be an interesting camp story, or is he just a guy that is there for a look, you know, to have the right numbers? And are they really looking down the road with the retirement of Buster Skrine for a veteran that becomes open at one time or another? Maybe he's not there now, but maybe he's going to be cut and he would be a fit for them because they do lack some experience at cornerback.
Yeah, and I am curious of how active the free agent market will be after cuts because I we see it every year that there's some veteran guys that get released.
And there's the waiver.
Yeah, there's the waiver
wire, so the Titans aren't exactly at the top of that thing.
No, and I'm also curious, you know, is it going to be a little more active this year just because GMs are playing the salary cap game because it's, you know, and John talked about that a little bit. How much is it going to continue to go up? Where are they at with things like that? So they could find that veteran out there that gets released.
Well, the good part about this team in particular, and Vrabel has – he's pushed this and he's preached this. You know, just because you are an undrafted guy or a seventh-round guy or a guy that we bring into free agency, just because, you know, we bring you in and you started that spot, we're going to give you every opportunity to win a job on this team. So we're not just bringing you in as a body. Yes, we need the depth, but you can be at the start of camp, you can be fifth on the depth chart. And as we go through camp, you can win yourself a spot on this team. So that's what I truly believe that with Mike Vrabel. I do. He and John Robinson. I believe that they bring guys in and say, I'm giving you an opportunity to make this team. You're not just a body. You got an opportunity to make this team. Change everybody's mind around here and make this team better.
Mike Vrabel said pads are going to go on Monday. Harold Landry spoke to the media and talked about ramping things up with the pads.
How much has this ramp-up period got you guys ready for when the pads do come on?
Yeah, I mean, I think the ramp-up period is important because, you know, no matter how hard you're training, you know, away from the building, when you get back here, I feel like you need that ramp-up period, especially, you know, with the amount of reps, you know, you get throughout practice, you need that build-up period. So, you know, I think it's helpful and beneficial, and I think Vrabel does a, you know, him used to be a player, I think it definitely that helps him make decisions, and I think he does a great job taking care of us, making sure, you know, we're getting the amount of work we need to get in.
Derek, how important is that to, you know, kind of get your body conditioned, and then you put the pads on, which is the extra weight and obviously the hitting that comes with it?
Yeah, I mean, it's critical to these players now that you sort of ease yourself into it. Because they hadn't been in pads the whole time. Many camps, I don't think they were in pads at all. So to sort of ease these guys back into it and then have that Monday to really get going, I think it's critical. Back, you know, 20 years ago, they didn't operate from that fashion. It was like as soon as you stepped on the field, you came outside with your pads on. There was no, okay, we're going to ease our way into this. We're going to do, you know, a week of no pads and then turn on the pads the next following week. No, it was as soon as we step out on that field, we're going to have some form of pads on and we're going. So for these guys, I think it's good because you just don't want to, you know, throw these guys in pads when they haven't been in pads, you know, basically OTAs or nothing.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Coming up next, there's been some contracts handed out in the NFL, including one yesterday for a prominent name. We will discuss that coming up next here on Chase Willie and D Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game. Back here, 1025, 1063, The Game, Chase Willie and D Mace, Stillman and Company coming up at the top of the hour as they'll talk more training camp as the pads will go on Monday. But some contracts being handed out in the NFL. Well, some have, some haven't been. Obviously, we know the Kyler Murray situation and what has happened there. But DK Metcalf was one wide receiver for the Seahawks that was wanting a new deal, and he got that, a three-year contract extension that was handed out by them yesterday. And Derek, a pretty good deal for him, as he is able to re-sign for $72 million as DK Metcalf. What do you think of that?
Yeah, it was an extension, and he ended up getting $30 million in signing bonus, which is the highest ever for a receiver until probably next year or sometime in the next couple of months. But
is that more than A.J. Brown got?
Signing bonus wise, yeah. Yes. I don't know how it shakes out as far as average, because I don't know what he was making his last year, because it's just a three-year extension, so added on to his last year, which is a four-year contract. I'm sure in total it's a two- or three-year contract rather than a four. But, I mean, this is a guy they needed to have, I think. This is a guy that, you know, he's put up big touchdown totals for them. I think he had 12 last year. You know, they need that big physical presence on the outside. He's a deep ball threat. With he and Tyler Lockett, they are, you know, one of the best 1-2 combos in the National Football League right now. And he's coming off of he didn't have 1,000 yards last year, but he's had 1,000 yards before. But he got you, so he's a red zone target. He's a big guy, red zone target, fast guy. So without a known commodity at quarterback, they needed to keep him. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe this attracts someone like Garoppolo. You know,
that's
having those two guys on the outside, bringing Garoppolo in, locking him up on the outside, bringing Garoppolo in. Now, you know, he's not, you know, Russell Wilson, but he is a guy that can command an offense and win you football games.
Yeah, and you've got Metcalf and you've got Lockett, a really good veteran on the other side. You got some weapons there. So now what do you think if you're Deebo Samuel and you see this? Like, it has worked really well. Like, we were questioning, you know, can you really move the needle when you drum up this media attention? Hey, we're changing the market. Mm-hmm. We're this group of wide receivers. We saw what happened with A.J. Brown and the decision the Titans made. They thought around $20 million was right. Mm-hmm. They pitched it to him. He wasn't buying it. He wanted more, so they moved on. We'll see what happens with the Eagles. Now you have DK Metcalf signing a very comparable deal, even though arguably he hasn't been as valuable as A.J. Brown, I would say. A.J. Brown being more of the key number one. Metcalf has been more with Lockett, 1-1A, I would say, roughly the same amount of production. But now here you're Deebo Samuel saying, I'm more valuable than any of these guys.
Yeah.
So he's sitting out waiting for the 49ers to come to the table. What's he going to get?
Yeah, and I wonder, and he's also basically said he doesn't want to be the dual threat anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, he just wants to be a receiver and doesn't want to be that running back dual threat, which I don't know if that's the right move for him, because I think he could probably try and get more money if he does have that dual threat ability.
But I think his main deal is, listen, I'm a receiver. I'm one of the best receivers in the National Football League. I want to be, you know, paid along the lines of Davante Adams, Tyreek Hill, Mike Evans, these guys that are getting top-tier money, A.J. Brown. Obviously, he probably thinks he needs more than A.J. Brown. Based on production, yes, he deserves more than A.J. Brown. So it doesn't hurt him that DK gets a contract like this, with the signing bonus being $30 million, which is the highest signing bonus of any receiver in NFL history. So, you know, again, just like Lamar Jackson, this only helps. It doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
You know, and San Francisco don't, especially with them ushering in a new quarterback, they don't want to lose Deebo Samuel.
No, they can't afford.
Exactly, they can't afford. Not with
he's their best offensive weapon.
Trey Lance at quarterback. They can't afford.
They've got to have him.
Yeah, they got to have him.
And they've got to have him in the same role, I think.
And to be honest with you, I think John Lynch is kind of in a career-defining situation as a general manager. I mean, we know he's a Hall of Fame player, and I think he's done an okay job at GM, but depending on what he gets for Jimmy G and when he does that, moving up to get Trey Lance, was that the right move? Is Trey Lance that franchise quarterback? And then how he handles Deebo. Mm-hmm. I mean, that to me, this is a big time for John Lynch at GM. I saw an article in the USA Today with the headline that is this: Lamar Jackson is backing the Ravens into a corner in the most respectful way possible. Lamar is in camp. He is practicing, but he doesn't have a new contract yet. He's representing himself. Do we think that this is going to get done before camp is over?
See, I think it's an interesting contract with Metcalf coming out publicly and saying, I'm not practicing. Deebo Samuel saying, I'm not practicing until we get a new deal. Metcalf, they had a quick reaction. Or maybe they just thought they were far enough along. Like, okay, don't worry about it. We'll get it done. But Lamar Jackson, kind of like Jeffrey Simmons, is playing and practicing while he's negotiating. And by the way, he is his own agent. He does not have an agent, so he's doing the negotiation on his own. So I think this is a really interesting case to watch.
Yeah, it is, but he's going to win the public battle. Lamar, he's going to win it. Why? Because he's doing everything he's supposed to do. He didn't say anything during mini camps and all this other stuff. He just said, hey, listen, y'all know I want a contract. I'm not, you know, I'm just, y'all know what the deal is. And first day of camp, who's there? Lamar Jackson. Who's on the field underneath center? Lamar Jackson. Who wants a new contract? Lamar Jackson. Everybody else, you know, coming out publicly, you know, scrubbing stuff off of their Instagram about teams and all this stuff. And what is Lamar Jackson doing? Being a professional and saying, listen, I'm just going to do my job. I know I deserve to get paid. Y'all know I deserve to get paid. I don't need to get on social media and you know, go against a team and organization that I want to be a part of.
Yeah.
So when it's all said and done, even when people talk about Lamar Jackson and his contract situation, they don't say anything bad about him. They just talk about it. Why? Because he's doing it the right way. He's going about his business, but everybody knows eventually he will get the contract, and he will, if not the highest paid quarterback in the NFL, he will be the second highest paid quarterback in the NFL.
That is
until somebody else signs a deal.
Do you think, though, that with something this important, his second contract, this is where he's going to cash in, and the fact that, you know, they've built the offense around him. He runs so well. All of the stuff that people have gone backwards and forwards about his skill set. Is he right to negotiate on his own behalf, or would he be in better position? Would a veteran agent help him in this situation?
You know, that's his decision. I don't know. I really don't, because to him, this is my last big contract. So if I can negotiate this contract on my own, and he's doing it on his own, but believe me, he has people that, you know, that's looking over everything and making sure everything is right, but he's not paying someone 3-4% of the whole deal. Again, I've said this before. He wants to be able to pay someone a flat fee for a contract that he knows he's supposed to make in between these dollars. You know, so it's not like, you know, some contract that we're got to really work to put together. You know what he's worth.
Okay, let me ask it this way. What about just sitting across from the table from your employer and you're hashing out your strengths and weaknesses where, you know, you have to, you know, you try to take the personal part aside, but it's hard, right? I mean, they're telling you, this is why we can't offer you this many dollars. You're only worth this because of X, Y, Z. And you're like, wait a minute. I'm the most valuable guy on the team. I'm the quarterback. I've done all of this stuff. How do you try to separate that? Because that's what you have to do, right? Yeah,
but I don't think the Ravens are approaching it in that way. You know, you got to be strategic.
You have to be smart how you go about it.
Yeah, because you're talking to the guy you want to be your quarterback. You're not talking to an agent.
Right.
An agent,
yeah,
you can say anything.
Yeah.
You're talking to the guy that you want to lead you to a Super Bowl.
Well,
so you got to be very delicate on how you approach that.
And he
knows it.
Sure. And I am curious because you know the people he's dealing with. I mean, you know Eric DaCosta. You know, Ozzie's kind of taking a step back at this point. But, you know, Eric was there when you were there in the front office. So, I mean, from everything you've ever told me about that front office and that organization,
they're straight
shooters.
Fair. Yeah, they're fair. They're straight shooters. Ozzie has always been fair and a straight shooter, and DaCosta's the same way. So that's why I think Lamar feels comfortable enough with that organization that he believes, okay, I can do this on my own because I know they will be fair. Now, whatever that number is, I don't know, but I think once it comes out, it will be a number that's fair for Lamar and fair for that organization.
another player that did get a big contract that we talked about was Kyler Murray. However, there's been a change to the contract. We'll discuss that coming up next. It's Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game.
What do you read into the independent study clause in the Kyler Murray contract? It's very interesting to read about. It's like you can't play video games. Like, independent study is no TV on, no other people in there. You're working. So what do we read in?
I don't think there's much room for interpretation here. Chris Mortensen had a report. Listen, Chris Mortensen had a report around the Super Bowl that there was concerns about his leadership and work ethic, being selfish and not being not having the work ethic and study habits that they would want out of a starter. I mean, that was Mort's report around the Super Bowl, as people were kind of forecasting that he was going to get a new contract. And, you know, there were some people that have been screaming recently that was just the team at the time using Mort to, you know, drive down the value of Kyler Murray, which is complete nonsense.
Tim Hasselbeck joining us earlier this week talking about Kyler Murray. The clause that was put in the contract that basically said he had to study 4 hours a week, watch film, and if he did not do that, and there was evidence that he did not do that, then that could void the contract, and that has since been removed.
But
by
you
the
Tim,
Arizona Cardinals.
So you had sort of a great tidbit there by Tim going back to the Super Bowl well before they really got to work on the contract. Sort of planting the seed even as far back as February that this was an issue. And Tim went on to say, look, this was, you know, this clause was born out of that, right?
Yeah.
There's a reason that clause was put in there. And despite the attempts today by, or whenever that was, Kyler Murray coming forward and saying, here are all the things I've done.
Yeah, here
you
are
know,
my accolades.
This is ridiculous that you would think that I don't do anything like that. Well, he's trying to convince the media and the fans, but the fact is this was discussed behind the scenes, negotiated. You came up with this clause. So it's not the fans and the media's narrative. It's your own team, your own surrounding people. And this goes back to Mort's report in February. So this has been out there for a long time. So
yeah,
it's up to him now to change the narrative.
I mean, you can't blame, you know, fans for, you know, assuming that you don't study enough at that position. You can't blame media members for asking a question and being a little concerned that this clause is in your contract. You can't be mad at anybody outside of the organization and yourself and your agent, because you can be mad at the organization that they put it in there, but be mad at yourself that they had to put this in here, and then be mad at your agent that you had to sign it because it was in the contract to get your money. So don't make it seem like, oh, this is a media thing and a fan thing that they're getting on me, because it's not. If it wasn't in your contract, we wouldn't be talking about it.
Well,
but it is in your contract.
And here's the thing. It's very simple for me how he can make this go away. Go out and win games.
Exactly.
If you're winning, you get them to the playoffs, everybody's going to forget about this because you're doing your job. Now, the thing with Kyler has been, he's such a dynamic player. And, I mean, you remember last year how they carved up the Titans and – or was that 2 years ago?
That was last year.
That was last year opening day.
They all run together. But last year, and then, you know, the first part of the season, he's really, really good. They look like a really, really good team. And then they fall off. And that's kind of been his story of as you get going along, he falls off. The team falls off. He got hurt.
His best weapon in the midst of the season.
Yep.
And now he won't, you know, Hopkins won't be available for the first six game of the season because he's suspended.
They don't have Christian Kirk. They brought in Hollywood Brown, so there's new adjustments to be made there. So that's a fair question. Now, I think you bring up something good, Chase, to chew on, and that is, will it matter long term, essentially, that they actually took away the clause? Like, none of us really care. That they weren't gonna fire him for having 3 hours of study as opposed to 4 hours of study. That was put in for a purpose, to send a message. And like you said, there's all kinds of theories on why that was leaked. but it was leaked for one reason or another. So now, even though they pull back and they have this statement, hey, yeah, I didn't know it was going to cause this kind of a distraction, let's just take the clause away and not worry about it. The fact is, we all know that that clause was there. So will it matter if he has a couple of games where some people like Tim or people that go on all the networks and break down film? You know what's going to happen. If he has a bad game, they're going to say, well, here's the read. He should have had this read and not that read. This is going to follow him regardless of this move today.
Yeah, and here's an interesting theory that Pro Football Talk has. Mm-hmm. I was reading this earlier, that the Cardinals basically rescinded rip up the homework clause in the contract because they don't want him to change agents. Because right now he and Cliff Kingsbury have the same agent. They don't want him to change agents. Because if he does that, then the new agent doesn't get any piece of this contract. So, therefore, they're afraid that they'd be pushing to redo the contract sooner rather than later. Mm. I think that's an interesting theory.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you truly believe that clause, that you did that clause out of good faith, then why take it out? I'm not worried about if you change agents. That's up to you if you change agents. It has nothing to do with us as a team. Only thing it has to do with us is we may have to negotiate with somebody else later on down the line. But if I truly believe you don't put in enough hours as a quarterback, I'm leaving that clause in there. I don't care about this agent stuff, you know, because if you're not logging enough hours, it will show on the field. And in a few years, if you come to me and ask for a new contract and those numbers hadn't gotten any better and we hadn't gotten any better as a team, I'm telling you, bye-bye. See you. I draft another guy.
Junie on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, Kyler Murray is a sensitive man-child. The guy called a press conference over media and Twitter criticism. Red flag for me.
I did think. Yeah. I mean, he should have stuck with, Derek, was what you brought up right away, that an explanation of, look, just because I'm not some bookworm and spending overnight hours, tons of hours in the classroom, doesn't mean I'm not preparing. There's different ways to absorb the material and learn how to, get the game plan in, look at the film, understand the opponent. There's different ways of doing that. If he had emphasized that a little bit more, and he did bring it up. But it was also woven in there with, look at what I did in high school. Hey, I was a great baseball player.
And he's right. He's right on all fronts.
We know that.
But I don't care what you did in high school.
You need to convince us. We know. He was the first pick in the draft. I mean, we all had pretty good accolades in high school, even yours truly.
So no, I don't need to put that out there. I don't care what you did in high school.
I was a really good manager.
Now.
You know.
And look at you, you're still managing.
I still am. Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah.
That's what I do. I forgot to do this, so I'm sorry, Nick. Caller number 3-615-737-1025. You will win a pair of tickets to 3ICE, North America's premier 3-on-3 ice hockey league, which will be at Bridgestone Arena on Saturday, August 6th.
And just while we have a little ice theme here, John Klingberg, 1 year deal for $7 million for the Ducks. He didn't like the market. There's no way to look at it otherwise if you're John Klingberg.
He thought he was
going to get 7 years. He thought he was going to get a lot of money. He thought contenders would be fighting over him. He was probably the best defenseman on the market, but nothing was really right. He goes to a rebuilding team for 1 year. That was a really interesting move, and rumor has it that there are some trade talks behind the scenes going on with Mr. Patrick Kane, who has 1 year left. We'll see how that shakes out, but apparently Dallas is a team that has been talking.
Interesting.
I thought I was going to be a basketball player. Look at what happened. It's not always what we think.
I think you need to call a press conference.
I think it worked out.
Yeah, it did.
By the way, Dwight Howard apparently was walking around Nashville yesterday and wanted to try out for WWE, so...
Dwight Howard was in town?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow.
That was the rumor. So there you go. That's going to do it for us, but stick around. Stillman and Company coming up next. A full practice report from Jared and Caroline, and some names have stood out to Jared and Caroline. They will discuss that coming up here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.